Well, Pam gave it away, what we're going to talk about today. Something that we wouldn't normally think to be the case. It's one of those things that Paul identified as a mystery. We spoke about that a couple of weeks ago. But it reveals a phenomenon, what we could call a purposeful phenomenon, that we wouldn't normally expect to be the case. And it's rather profound in what it tells us, because it answers a lot of questions. We live in a world that is largely disinterested in the things of God, have no interest. But then there's another segment of society that is religious, that we could say is very religious, devoted to the Word. They spend a great deal of time studying and wanting to understand what they're reading. But yet Paul in his time recognized something. And I think it's something that helps us understand the world condition as it is right now, and at the same time reveals what God is actually doing with His creation. In 2 Corinthians 3, verse 14, Paul says this, and he's speaking of a people that we wouldn't expect to be the recipients of this assessment. He says, but their minds were blinded. Who? For until this day remains the same veil untaken away in the reading of the Old Testament, which veil is done away in Christ. Now, in that sentence, there's four points of interest. Number one, certain people's minds were blinded. Blinded by whom? We'll see proof of that in a few minutes. It exposes the fact that there is a veil between the person's field of knowledge and understanding the full implications of what they know. And it tells us that that veil remains. It isn't taken away. And that veil is over the minds of people who are devoted students of the Old Testament. Now, this was in Paul's time. This was the situation. He recognized it. But Paul then goes on to say something that is somewhat limited in its scope. But he says, that veil is done away in Christ. So there's a number of points in that one assessment. It shows us there's a key area that the religious world doesn't understand. And it has a broader application than we might want to think. But understanding what he said and why he said it could answer a number of questions, not just with regard to that particular religious persuasion, but it will answer a number of other questions as it regards the rest of the world, the rest of the religious world, because that veil exists in a number of areas, not just that particular one. This was the one that Paul was dealing with at the time. But it shows that that veil is being removed as people come to know and relate to Jesus Christ. But what is it that's veiled? Specifically, it's talking about the Old Testament. Now, he revealed in other places that there was a number of new things that the New Testament church was coming to understand, things that he identified as mysteries, which they were to the people of the day, but which were being revealed to those people who were coming to know the truth, the New Testament era, coming to know Jesus Christ and who and what he was and what his message was and what his intent was. But it's the Old Testament that's held back from the understanding of the very people who possessed and who immersed themselves into the Old Testament, let alone having a veil between them and the New Testament. But we need to ask ourselves, who placed that veil? Who placed the veil and why? Because that's what we need to understand. And when we understand it, we can come to understand a great deal more of what God is doing with his creation. Does God deliberately cause some people to not grasp what they're reading? Now, we can think of that in an even broader context than just the reading of the Old Testament. Are there people who can read the Word and understand the language? It's not a language problem. They know what it says, but do they really grasp what it means? That's the question. Where is the veil? Is it just between the Old Testament and those who are basically Old Testament devotees? Is there a similar veil among those people who are oriented in their thinking to the New Testament? How could that be? Well, as far as Paul's statement is concerned, it was between the Old Testament and the minds of those worshipers. Its own intelligentsia, even. Its scholars. Its students of the law. While they understood their word, while they understood their scriptures, yet there was things that they didn't get. There was a veil. Paul recognized it. Jesus Christ recognized it even before him. In Matthew 23, he called it out too. Matthew 23, let's look there. Verse 23. He says, "Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin, and have omitted the weightier matters of the law, judgment, mercy, and faith. These ought you to have done, and not to leave the other undone." Now, who is he speaking to? This just wasn't the casual worshiper. This was the leading people in the religion of the day, the scribes and Pharisees. Jesus Christ was exposing the fact that they obsessed over the tiniest little thing and yet totally missed the point when it came to the what he calls the weightier matters of the law. Judgment, mercy, and faith. Major themes of the New Testament, but somehow it just wasn't a factor in their religious practices. While they regarded themselves as super righteous for being attentive to such small details, and yet they missed the point that they didn't get the real issues. How does judgment, mercy, and faith factor into their legalistic approach? What Jesus Christ was saying to them is they are basically obsessed with the trivial matters, over-focused on the minor issues, what we call majoring in the minors. That happens so often. Majoring in the minors. Is that the cause, or is that the effect of this veiling situation? We need to ask ourselves, what exactly is it that they didn't understand? Well, we just enumerated three majors: judgment, mercy, and faith. Wasn't so much a component in the religion of Paul's day, the first century religion. Can we say that it is yet? It's maybe a question. But Paul's point was that the veiling includes studious people, not just casual interest people. But the veil applies to their minds. Despite their intellect, could we say that it's a matter of the spirit? Is that the component that provides the clarity that is so important? You know, people a lot of times think they know a lot, and they can get comfortable in what they know. And perhaps that can be a danger if we cut it off and refuse to grow further. There's always plenty of room for growth. There's things that we don't know. People in general don't know what they don't know. How many times have we heard that? We can become content with what we do know, not realizing that there's more that perhaps we ought to be looking into. We can be satisfied with a level of knowledge, but that can be a danger. The New Testament presents some new foundational revelations, and yet even some of those can be veiled. Those revelations involve basically the plan and the progress of the process of redemption. The question we need to ask is, in the modern era, among those of us who are oriented to what we call the New Testament religion, or the New Testament expression of it, can there be a veil in that area as well? Kind of a profound question, but I think the answer is obvious, because so many religious people of varying denominations have things that they just can't see. We've encountered that. You know, we try to tell them some of the things that we understand, and it's a blank wall. It just doesn't compute. We would have to say, yes, in fact, there is a veil there as well. It's moved on. It's moved up the line. People just don't understand certain things. Paul was speaking of his generation, but what about ours? What would we say of our religious counterparts? Do they adequately understand? Do they adequately fathom the full message of the New Testament? We can name many things that the religious world of our day doesn't understand. Why? Well, there is an answer, but it's going to take some time before the full implications of that settle in. Anyone who's been on the internet lately doing biblical research, there's a tremendous amount of information online. And we find that there are many wonderful, scholarly, informational sources out there. It's incredible, the stuff you can find. both in the Jewish world and in the Christian world. The scholarship is astounding in many important areas, and yet, in many places, there's a boulder in the path, what we could call a stumbling block or a veil of some sort over the minds of those people. In 2 Timothy 3:7, it talks about people in this category that I'm talking about, where it says of them, ever learning, and yet never able to come to a knowledge of the truth. How real is that? It's amazing the depth of research, the depth of scholarship that goes on in some areas. What they know. It could put us to shame in many cases, and yet there is a component in that where they don't get it. And if you could talk to any of those kind of people, a lot of times it just doesn't go over. It doesn't penetrate their comprehension. Why is it some people are concluded in blindness? That's what Paul said of them. And he would know. I mean, he grew up among those people. He was one of the best in their religious orientation. And yet he saw something in them. You would think that the scribes and Pharisees would be prime candidates for conversion. I mean, all that they knew. So much of their lives were devoted to studying the Old Testament. It just doesn't compute that they would not be the prime candidates for the New Testament religion. And yet, as Paul saw, as Christ saw, there was a limit to what they could understand. And we're going to find that in the world in general. It's a condition that is specifically imposed by God. Yes, Satan is involved too, but we're going to read of that. I would say Satan is involved more in the area of people who aren't interested in religion. There's a condition specifically imposed by God on people who are interested in religion. And that's the curious thing. Satan's involvement applies more with non-religious people, but God's with certain religious people. Here's the key to understand. And maybe before I go that, we should go to that. We should go to a passage that I think lays out this situation very clearly. And that's in Romans chapter 11. Paul is addressing this subject at length, where he says, starting in verse 1, and we're going to skip through some of these. I'm not going to read the whole chapter, but we're going to skip through it. In verse 1, he says, I say then, has God cast away his people? Paul is addressing himself to the earlier statement that he made about the veil of blindness over the understanding of certain religious people. Has God cast away his people? Is he not calling them? Paul says, God forbid the thought, for I also am an Israelite of the seed of Abraham of the tribe of Benjamin. He's listing himself as an exception to what is evident elsewhere. In verse 2, he says, God has not cast away his people. And that's what we need to understand about this. He has not cast away his people, which he foreknew. Very revealing statement. He's saying God knows who can respond and when. Down to verse 5. Even so then, at this present time also, there is a remnant according to the election of grace. The difference is what we know as the election of grace. Verse 7, what then? Israel has not obtained that which he seeks for. These are people seeking for it. But the election has obtained it. And the rest were blinded. Blinded. By whom? The next verse tells us, verse 8, according as it is written, God has given them the spirit of slumber, eyes that they should not see, and ears that they should not hear unto this day. It's an ongoing thing. When did that ever go away? When in history can we look back and say, at that point in time, that veil was lifted? Now, Paul was writing some generation after the fact. Verse 10, let their eyes be darkened, that they may not see, and bow down their back always. I say then, have they stumbled that they should fall? God forbid, but rather through their fall, salvation is come unto the Gentiles, for to provide them, to provoke them rather, to jealousy. Now if the fall of them be the riches of the world, and the diminishing of them be the riches of the Gentiles, how much more their fullness? It's giving us a clue that there's going to be a point in time when they're brought back into a fullness of understanding that they don't presently have. And we can apply that not just to the Old Testament world. I think it has just as much application to the New Testament world. Verse 15, for if the casting of the way of them be the reconciling of the world, this is the rest of the world, benefited from this situation, what shall the receiving of them back be but life from the dead? Now, there's an interesting passage in Zechariah 8:23 that sort of gives us a picture of what's going to be in the millennial age. This can't be said today. Zechariah 8:23, it says, thus says the Lord of hosts, in those days it shall come to pass that 10 men shall take hold out of all languages of the nations, even shall take hold of the skirt of him that is a Jew, and saying, we will go with you, for we have heard that God is with you. This reflects on the time when God is going to restore those people to a level of understanding, and he is going to use them to be grafted into the original tree, as that same chapter talks about, where they are going to be the religious leadership in the world to come. And that's important to understand. Most of the religious world today kind of thinks along the lines where this is the only day of salvation. It's another important mystery. Not one that Paul necessarily enumerated, but it's one that we understand, that there is going to come a time when the opportunity for salvation is going to be open to all the world. And he is going to use these scholarly people, with the veil taken away, to be the educational instruments in his hand to bring the rest of the world around. 10 men are going to take hold of the garments of one individual and want to go with him and follow him, because they've heard truthfully at this time that God is with them. So it's important that we realize that there is a plan, that the blindness of Israel for a time And we could say Israel in a greater sense than just one particular tribe of it. But there is a time when that veil is going to be lifted. Christ is going to take it away. He's taken it away with many people, but it's basically a remnant, as Paul explains. Those of us who are called in this time, this age. Down to verse 20. It says, well, because of unbelief, they were broken off. And you stand by faith. Be not high-minded. Okay, here's a caution to us. Be not high-minded, but fear. For if God spared not the natural branches, take heed lest he also spare not you. Verse 23, and they also, if they abide not still in unbelief, shall be grafted back in. For God is able to graft them in again. For if you were cut out of the olive tree, which is wild by nature, and were grafted contrary to nature into a good olive tree, how much more shall these, which be the natural branches, be grafted back into their own olive tree? Do we get the picture there? There is a time for them. Verse 25, for I would not, brethren, that you should be ignorant of this mystery, lest you should be wise in your own conceits, that blindness in part has happened to Israel until, important word, until the fullness of the Gentiles be come in. And so, the ultimate consequence of this veiling, and so, all Israel shall be saved, as it is written. There shall come out of Zion a deliverer, and shall turn away ungodliness from Jacob. For this is my covenant unto them, when I shall take away their sins. God has covenanted with Israel. And that covenant involves the salvation of the major part of that ethnicity. And we have to think in broader sense than just Jews. There's other people that are of Israel. So let's not think of this as a them versus us. Let's think of this as an inclusive sense where it involves us as well. Down to verse 31. Even so have these also now not believed, that through your mercy they also may obtain mercy. God is using other people to reflect back to them. For God has concluded them all in unbelief, that he might have mercy upon all. Oh, the depth of the riches, both of the wisdom and the knowledge of God, how unsearchable are his judgments and his ways past finding out. Paul is alluding to the fact that God has a plan for them, but it involves this situation. For who has known the mind of the Lord? Or who has been his counselor? Are we going to tell God what to do? Are we going to tell God how to work out his plan? Do we know so much that we can advise him? Verse 35, sort of a curious statement, but let's expand on perhaps what it's meaning. Verse 35, or who has first given to him, and it shall be recompensed unto him again. Are we going to give God good advice, and then he's going to reward us for our wisdom, and is he going to recompense us for telling him how he ought to do his job? Rhetorical question, but I think Paul understands. We're not going to work this thing out to a better end result than what God is doing. Concluding the chapter, for of him and through him and to him are all things. To whom be glory forever. God knows what he's doing is the point. But can we see what he's doing? Can we see what he's doing? So I said earlier that that situation can be applicable to New Testament peoples just as well. We have scholars in the world who can elucidate in great depth, but yet they're ignorant of or rejective of certain essentials. People in the religious world can be pointedly dismissive of clear truths. I'm sure you've run into that. Deeply religious people, but averse to doctrinal correction. The religious world of today doesn't really understand the full scope of the millennial kingdom. That's essential. That was the basic core of Jesus' message. The world doesn't understand that there is a second harvest period to come, which is in fact, the main one. The first harvest, the one that occurs at Christ's second coming, is small by comparison. Another thing that the world doesn't grasp is the simple fact that the holy days reveal the plan of redemption, how it works, and when it works. How much do we need to see before we can see the truth? We live in a society that lives in an atmosphere of lies. We kind of know that, but have we really thought about the effect of it? We have government or political lies. We have medical or pharmaceutical lies. We have media lies. We have manipulated science. We have the evolutionary concept that has infected all of academia and academia itself is oriented to teachings that deliberately leave God out of the picture. Paul illustrated a number of what he called mysteries in his day, and we reviewed them a couple weeks ago. Let me just briefly breeze through them as a reminder. He spoke of the mystery of the incarnation, God made flesh. He spoke of Israel's blindness, where they're reserved for a later calling. That's what we're looking at today, basically. He spoke of Gentile inclusion, where conversion was not ethnically exclusive. He spoke of the indwelling of God's Spirit, which is essential for life. It's essential for being one of His. He spoke of the headship of Christ, Him being the supreme Lord. And that contrasted with the Old Testament orientation. He spoke of the immortality, the flesh to spirit change in the resurrection. These were the issues that were fulfilled in the New Testament revelations, at least initially. They're revealed in the New Testament in a broader sense. But there are more mysteries that have come to the fore in our generation. Do we all understand equally? I don't think we do. We're told to grow in grace and knowledge. That's an ongoing process. Can we broaden the scope of our understanding further? Or are we developed just to a point and then we can become satisfied and not go on any further? So what's the approach? The approach that matters. Well, we need to study and never stop studying. We need to draw close to God. We need to be constant in prayer. Not just the act of praying itself, but of walking with God in a prayerful attitude. We need to be receptive of His inspiration, not rejective of it. We need to be willing to accept new understandings because they will come. In 2 Peter 1, verse 10, it tells us that we need to make our calling and election sure. Wherefore, rather, brethren, give diligence to make your calling and election sure. For if you do this thing, you shall never fail. You shall never fall, rather. The thing is, what removes the veil is our calling. We're given an opportunity to become converted in this age, to understand what God is doing, to understand what He wants for us, and to reveal to us His plan. We're part of the plan, but it's important that we remain diligent and not slack off so that we never fall.